Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 13, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Manizza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. I'm broadcasting on Facebook Live right now, as well as Instagram Live, so you can go to Facebook Live or Instagram Live at any time and watch/listen to this show. So update on health stuff. Still up and down. Had a nice weekend. I was, you know, I ran around. I was very energetic and went to see two friends. I went to see Angie over at Yono, who was doing her float-a-thon, and I brought her a coffee, and I had gone over to Grounded to get her the coffee. So I had a very nice time chatting with Angie, and I'm realizing that one of the things that makes me feel good is spending time with friends, which can be hard for me because I also need a lot of rest. But Saturday was a day that I went and I did go see Angie, and I had a nice time chatting with her for a while and set myself up for a float next weekend. Hopefully I'll make it to the float next weekend. And then after that, I went to see my friend Amanda Coach. It was her birthday on Saturday, and Angie's birthday is coming up this coming Saturday, Saturday the 16th. So happy birthday to both of them. Today is my childhood sweetheart's birthday, Ron Coleman. It's his birthday on March 11th. So he's, he's hit 61. Wow, now he's like past 60 and now he's 61. My goodness, we're all us 1963 people. We're turning 61 this year. My goodness, can you even believe it? On Friday, we had the Friends of Mansfield Hollow meeting, and the Fernwood Rescue was there, and they brought the opossums. So I got to see the opossums. So if you look at my Facebook page, you will see me hanging out with opossums. I got to pick up opossums and pet them and talk to them. And it was very nice. The two opossums that they brought that were ambassadors were Squirmy Shermy, also known as Sherman, and Wendy Wu. And so we learned a lot about opossums. Like, you know, the fact we knew that they were marsupials, but I didn't know that they don't make noise except for clicking at each other to communicate with each other. And that when you have rescue, you have varying levels of rescue. There are people who think, oh, you shouldn't keep possums. And the rescue, they rehabilitate the possums. And when the possums are ready and rehabilitated, they release them back out to the wild. So that's where they're supposed to be. And if a possum is not able to be rehabilitated, then they have a permit to keep them. And so Wendy and Shermy have issues with them, that they were both injured, and they are not, so they're not able to be released, so they get to be ambassadors. Wendy has vision issues, and they were both hit by cars. They both had some kind of injury, and so they were rehabilitated enough that they can live. And possums don't live very long. What did they say? They live for 2 or 3 years? That's
it? Yeah, 2 to 3 years.
And that's it. Poor possums. But it was very educational and very interesting, and I was very tired, and so was Ron. But I got a good night's sleep and then had a nice day on Saturday. And Sunday, I rested and relaxed all day so that at night, after my dinner, I could start having tremors again. Right? And I don't know if the tremors are a hoax from killing Lyme or they are an emergence of Bartonella. It's hard to know. So, and I was actually reading Buhner's book. I've spent some time reading the Buhner's book about co-infections and specifically about Bartonella. And I understand the Bartonella doesn't actually give you a hoax. When you're killing Bartonella, you don't get a hoax from it. It's you kill the Bartonella and it dies. And the other thing, he doesn't think that going after Bartonella antimicrobially is entirely the way to go. You can if you want to, but the big thing you do with Bartonella is you go after the other things. You reduce inflammation and strengthen the cardiovascular system because that's where it likes to hang out. So you reduce the inflammatory compounds that tend to rise when Bartonella is around. Bartonella does all kinds of clever things to hijack your immune system so it can continue to live. But there are some clever things that you can do right back to keep it down. And among those are reducing inflammation and strengthening the cardiovascular system. So I'm going to be adding some things to my program. I'm continuing to take resveratrol. I think I maxed out on Japanese knotweed, so I may not be able to take that, at least for a while. I am going to add back in essential oils, because the essential oils can kill both Lyme and Bartonella. So I'm going to add in oregano oil, and I was taking cinnamon and clove, and I took off from them. I'm going to put them back in. And they're very pleasant. The thing is, they taste it. The oregano oil, you know, I swallow a pill, but the cinnamon and clove, I put a drop in a glass of water and they're pleasant to take, especially the cinnamon. If the clove oil hits your mouth, of course, it makes it numb for a little bit. And that's kind of cool. And continuing to do Epsom salt baths, planning to do the float next week, restorative yoga. I was going to start doing more bike and weightlifting today, and that's out the window. So it's just very frustrating because I really want to get on with my life. And the other thing I get is extreme fatigue. So for the extreme fatigue, I am doing Eleuthero, which we're going to talk about today, and spirulina. I'm not doing rhodiola at this time, but I am going to add cordyceps. So that's interesting. The other thing he talked about for reducing inflammation and strengthening the blood vessels is pomegranate. And that's something that I drink pomegranate juice sometimes, but now I think I'm going to drink it all the time. So today I'm going to run out and get some pomegranate juice. He says, drink pomegranate juice throughout the day. It does so many good things for you. I have a pomegranate in the drawer, like an actual pomegranate. So I think I'll cut that up and start chewing on the seeds as well. So pomegranate is really good for you. It has ellagic acid in it. It's strengthening to blood vessels. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. You can drink the juice. You get the juice unsweetened. If you don't like the taste of straight pomegranate juice, you can get blends. It comes in pomegranate cherry. It comes in pomegranate blueberry. I think you can get pomegranate raspberry. And you can get plain pomegranate and cut it with whatever you like. You could do pomegranate orange or pomegranate grape, whatever you like. So because it does have kind of a weird astringent taste to it that you have to get used to. And I'm not entirely crazy about it, but I find the blend, pomegranate cranberry is delicious. So that would be one I would recommend. And cranberry is actually something that has wonderful anti-inflammatory properties too. And I do have some cranberry extract, so I can take that as well. So I'm going to be tweaking and adding and getting more rest. And so let's talk about rest. This is something that's salient this week. So Ronald, how are you doing? How do you feel about the daylight savings time?
I hate it.
You hate it. Explain to me why you hate it.
I hate it because I like it when it's light in the morning early. And I like that better than I like it late at night.
Well, it's going to be, we're going to continue to gain minutes at either end of the day.
Doesn't matter. What I think I object to more than anything else, we were having this discussion this morning in spin class.
Did you, how was spin class this morning?
What, lightly attended.
Right.
Nobody got up.
Of course. I had a terrible time getting up yesterday.
Too early. So there's that adjustment. We were talking about that. I was talking to Heather because she's been flying all over the country with her book tour right now.
Yeah.
So she's been, you know, dealing with time changes and flights, and I talked about that and how it takes me at least 3 to 4 days to adjust, and then I get back on a plane and fly back home, and then it's all screwed up again. It's disrupting to your schedule and your body, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I like where I was. I was getting up and the sun was starting to come up. It was really nice. I'd finished my spin class. The sun was out. It's really nice.
That's going to come back though.
Yeah, but it's just too much of an adjustment for me.
Right.
I don't think they should. I think they should just leave it alone.
They really should. There's a lot of good reasons to, and I talk about this every year, but I'm going to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
And losing the hour of sleep may not be the worst thing. That so I'm going to read off from, this is an article from the, let's see, this is from the American Heart Association. Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, it sure is. So losing the hour of sleep may not be the worst thing that happens to you when we spring forward. There's other things that can happen. And so there are health challenges that can happen. There was a study of hospital admissions across the state of Michigan. They saw a 24% increase in heart attacks on the Monday following the switch to daylight savings time.
No way!
Way! And there was a study from Finland where they found that the overall rate of ischemic stroke was 8% higher during the first 2 days after daylight savings time. Other researchers found that, in general, other serious heart attacks occur on more on Mondays than any other time of the week, making the day of the time change more worrisome. They don't know exactly why there's an increase in heart attacks and strokes during the change to daylight savings time. It's probably connected to the disruption of the body's clock. And it's important to be aware of the risk, even if you already have heart disease or other risk factors. And you obviously you want to make sure you recognize the signs of a heart attack and call 911. So I have some theories. Of course, if you are going to sleep and waking up at a particular time and you suddenly shift that by an hour is way too much. So you're changing the place. So, you know, I've talked about this before where cortisol and melatonin have an inverse relationship to each other. Your melatonin starts low in the morning, and you want it to be low because you want to be able to wake up, and melatonin gradually increases over the course of the day until it gets higher in the evening. If you have good melatonin function, it's higher in the evening and so that you feel sleepy so you can go to sleep. Whereas cortisol does the opposite thing. Cortisol is high in the morning so that you can wake up, and it gradually goes down, 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 so that it's low so you feel sleepy so that you can go to sleep at night. So the cortisol revs you up and melatonin calms you down. So you're at a different point in the scale if you wake up an hour earlier. Then there's significantly less cortisol and there's significantly more melatonin. Enough that it makes people not want to get up. And Ron experienced that where, you know, he teaches a 5:45 spin class and it was lightly attended today. It was lightly attended on the day after daylight savings time. So it's a real problem. Your body is more hypercoagulable in the morning. It's more coagulable in the morning. And when your blood is more likely, when your blood is thicker, it's more likely to clot. More likely to clot, you're more likely to get strokes and heart attacks. So that's part of what's going on. And it's stressful, you know, that you're, when you get up before you're ready to, your body has to kick out some extra cortisol, which may be, you know, that puts you into that fight or flight mode. And there's something about that that makes you more hypercoagulable. My guess is that you have to remember that cortisol's job is to run around your body, dumping sugar into your blood, taking out things in your body, turning it into sugar to dump into your blood so that you have energy to run away from the bear. So if you have more sugar in your blood, you're more coagulable. And so if you have a cortisol spike, an unwanted cortisol spike, you can have a sudden influx of sugar into your blood, and that will increase your insulin. Insulin increases inflammation. That's going to make you more coagulable. So that's a theory of mine, that there's a relationship between the cortisol, the insulin, melatonin, and coagulability. When you try to wake up, when you have higher melatonin, you're just going to feel groggy. That's probably not going to lead to coagulability, but melatonin, that's the other thing. Melatonin makes you less coagulable. Melatonin is anti-inflammatory, so you're going to be more coagulable when you have lower melatonin. Melatonin is going to be lower later, but you still have some on board. You have more on board than if you suddenly wake up an hour earlier. So your friend Heather, who's the author that travels all over the country, she could benefit from taking melatonin so she could make herself sleepier whenever she wants to go to sleep. And then she can reset herself by taking the melatonin at the about a half an hour before she wants to go to sleep, wherever she happens to be. Mm-hmm. So now, So there are some, they have some recommendations that if you want to help to get ahead of the time change, you want to go outside and get as much natural light as possible. It can help your body adjust to the rhythm for the change to come. Begin winding down a little earlier in the evening. While you can never make up the lost sleep, going into the time change well rested can help. And I thought I was going to be okay because I just chilled out and rested yesterday. I woke up this morning. I didn't want to get up. And don't compensate with extra caffeine. It might feel like the coffee or two can help you through the slump, but too much is not good for your heart. And it's going to cause heart rhythm problems, according to the American Heart Association. The amount of quality sleep a person gets at any time of the year is essential to your good health. That's why the American Heart Association adds sleep to their Life Essential 8, which is their equation of 4 health factors and 4 health behaviors that are needed for good cardiovascular health. You need to get adequate sleep. And so in addition to increasing the risk for cardiovascular conditions like heart attack and stroke, if you don't get enough sleep, it puts you at higher risk of things like depression, cognitive decline, and obesity. The thing is, if you stay awake when you're not supposed to be awake, your body's going to go, all right, you're not going to put me to sleep. You're not going to let me rest. All right, you better. So your primal brain is like, all right, I got to go start searching for food. You're going to tend to eat more if you don't get enough sleep. Because you're just gonna, body's gonna be telling you need the energy to do that. So there's a journal in the Journal of American Heart Association. A study found that variations in sleep duration of more than 2 hours a night within the same week were tied to developing hardened arteries known as atherosclerosis. And then the journal Hypertension found the link between excess weight and higher blood pressure in adolescence was stronger among those who had irregular sleep patterns, which contributes to elevated blood pressure in teens who had more visceral fat, that fat in their abdominal area. And there was a study in the Journal of the American Heart Association found that 1 in 4 women may develop irregular heart rhythms like atrial fibrillation after menopause, with stressful life events and poor sleep being contributing factors. And stress is just not good for you. And there was an abstract presented at the American Heart Association Scientific Sessions in 2023. They found that more than 1/3 of children in the U.S. did not get the amount of sleep recommended by the American Heart Association. So in the association's Life Essential 8 recommends the ideal level of sleep at varying ages. If you're 7 to 9 hours daily for adults, which a lot of my patients don't get that, 8 to 10 hours a day if you're 13 to 18 years old, 9 to 12 hours a day for if you're 6 to 12 years old, and 10 to 16 hours a day if you're 5 years or younger. So that's why little kids need to take lots of naps, because they're growing and changing and stuff. So here's some things that you can do. You shouldn't hit snooze. When you sleep past your alarm clock, it can actually make you groggier. Put your alarm clock across the room so you have to get out of bed to turn it off. Prioritize exposure to natural light. Get enough exposure to natural light during the day to regulate your body's internal clock and prepare for a restful night. Go for a walk when you wake up in the morning to promote physical activity. Or if you can't get yourself out for a walk, at least go stand on your porch or out in your yard and just look at the sun. I mean, don't look directly into the sun. But be out, go outside and look around. If you don't have time to actually take a walk, you can just, you know, sit outside or just get your body outside and feel the air and look at and get the natural light. If you drink too many sugary, caffeinated, or alcoholic drinks, that can disrupt your sleep. If you want to sleep through the night, limit your naps. If you take long naps during the day, they can disrupt your sleep patterns and make it harder to achieve restful sleep. Mind you, if you take a nap of whatever length and you sleep great through the night, then take your nap. It's fine. Do you sleep great even when you take a nap?
Yeah, I usually do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Create a relaxing bedtime routine. Engage in calming activities before you go to bed, like reading a book, journaling, taking a warm bath with Epsom salts or not, or practicing relaxation like deep breathing, meditation. I like yin or restorative yoga as well. Relaxing activities can help to ease you into a restful night's sleep. Some small changes in your daily habits can make a big difference in your sleep quality and overall health. And if you turn it, watching TV right before you go to bed, that's not a great thing to help you sleep. Reading a book and journaling. I say to people, why don't you read instead of, instead of watching TV. They say, well, if I start reading, I get sleepy and I fall asleep. I said, well, that's a good thing. If you do that and you're reading the book and then you get to a point where you just can't keep your eyes open, it's time to put down the book and turn off the light and go to sleep. And that's actually a good thing. And if you want to read longer, then you have to start reading earlier. You know, if you want reading to be part of what you do before you go to sleep, you have to start your reading process a little bit earlier, you know. And some nights it's really okay not to watch TV some nights. So daylight savings time it's been argued about. They've talked about doing away with it. They still haven't. I mean, I think it has to be, I don't know who's in charge of that. It's congressionally, or it's certainly by state. There are a couple of states that don't do daylight savings time. One of them is Arizona. Most of Arizona, it is done on the reservations, but it is not done in the rest of Arizona. So it's interesting when you cross the border. What is it? The Hoover Dam, right? When you cross the border between Arizona and Las Vegas, which we've done a number of times. On the one of the buildings at the Hoover Dam, it says Mountain Time, Arizona Time. And sometimes they're the same and sometimes they're not. So during, standard time for the rest of the country, Arizona time is the same as Mountain Time. Arizona time is going to be 2 hours. No, it's going to be the same as Mountain Time, whatever Mountain Standard. It's the same as Mountain Standard Time. And during the summer, during daylight savings time, it's an hour off. It's going to be an hour earlier. No, it's going to be right. No, it's going to be an hour later because Mountain Time backs up an hour or springs forward. Am I doing this right?
Spring forward, fall behind.
Yes. So Arizona, right. So Arizona in the winter is in Mountain Time, and Arizona in the summer is, I think it's the same as the West Coast. It's 3 hours off us. So in Colorado and in Las Vegas, in Nevada, it's going to be an hour later. Yeah. So anyway, well, Nevada's also in, well, I don't know. I'm not sure if part of Nevada's in Mountain Time and part of it's in Pacific Time. I'm not sure. So that's the daylight savings time deal. All right. So I wanted to tell you about some things I've added in to what helped me with my health and why I'm taking it. So one of the things I've added in is spirulina. So spirulina is a blue-green algae, and I'll tell you about that. It's a type of algae that grows in fresh or salt water. You can get it as a supplement in tablet, powder form. It has a lot of health benefits. It has a lot of nutrients and antioxidants. It's actually a cyanobacteria, which means it makes blue stuff. It's from a family called blue-green algae. Cyanobacteria can produce energy from sunlight through photosynthesis. And if you look at the spirulina powder, it's this deep, deep, dark green. It's like, I mean, darker than hunter green. It's like, it's sort of, you almost can't tell if it's black or not. And it is definitely green, but it's very, very dark. So you know that you're getting lots and lots of antioxidants. The ancient Aztecs consumed spirulina. And then it became popular again when NASA said that it could be grown in space and used by astronauts. And people use it to increase nutrients and antioxidants. It has a lot of nutrition in it, has some protein, has some vitamin B1, B2, niacin, B3, copper and iron. It also has small amounts of magnesium, potassium, and manganese. And it doesn't have a lot of calories. There is a small amount of fat. There's one gram of fat in a tablespoon. So it has omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And it's in a 1.5-to-1 ratio, which is actually a very good ratio. And so it doesn't have excessive omega-6s. It has a lot of omega-3. And it's good quality protein, and it provides all your essential amino acids. It doesn't actually have vitamin B12. It has a pseudo-vitamin B12 in it. Has wonderful antioxidants. The name of the antioxidant is phycocyanin, And that's what gives it that deep blue, green, black color. And it does help with oxidative stress. And there is a possibility that lowers cholesterol and triglycerides, that it lowers your LDL and raises your HDL and lowers your triglycerides. So that's nice. And it's been studied. It's good for people with metabolic syndrome. And it also helps to protect LDL from oxidation. So if you have high LDL, one of the things that I do is I test for, there's a test I can run called OxLDL, oxidized LDL, which you can ask your doctor to run for you. And if your LDL is a little high, but it's not oxidized, it's probably not going to bother you. So you can, by doing a lot of antioxidants, you can help to protect your LDL from being oxidized. There was a study that showed that spirulina can reduce exercise-induced lipid peroxidation and inflammation and muscle damage in 17 rugby players. Maybe you should take spirulina because you have muscle damage. Spirulina may have anti-cancer properties. It has to be studied. It was studied in animals, and they found that spirulina may help reduce cancer occurrence and tumor size. It may help with blood pressure. That helps me. That if you take 1 to 8 grams of spirulina a day, it could significantly reduce both your systolic and your diastolic blood pressure. That's the pressure of your heart pushing blood into your body and the filling pressure of your heart. Especially for people who already have high blood pressure, and they think it's because it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So that helps nitric oxide and helps your blood vessels relax and dilate. It can help you if you have allergic rhinitis. So maybe we should share the spirulina. All you have to do is there's a little scoop in the container that I have out front.
You can tell me after your show.
And you could throw it in your protein shake.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's all you have to do is a little scoop.
Yeah, because I'm having muscle damage problems right now.
Yeah, right.
Not good.
Did you go get your CK tested?
That's 1 o'clock today.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, that's another thing we should talk about.
So we found that the one study found that the spirulina was more effective than cetirizine. That's a common cetirizine is the brand name is levocetirizine is Zizol. Cetirizine is it's not Allegra, it's the other one. That everybody takes.
The sinus
stuff? Yeah. There's Allegra and there's Zizol and there's another one that is cetirizine. And now I can't think of it.
Yeah.
Because I don't take it and I don't recommend it. Right. I know what cetirizine is. I know it's an antihistamine.
I know I had taken something like that years ago and I had problems with that.
Yeah. No, I know. So there was a study that found cetirizine is more effective than that. Yeah. I think maybe you should take some of this. All right.
Okay.
So, and it could be helpful against anemia. It was studied to improve anemia in pregnant people during their second trimester, probably because it has so much chlorophyll in it. And remember that chlorophyll has a heme ring. No, not a heme. Yes, it is a heme ring. That's right. Has a heme ring just like hemoglobin does, but instead of having iron in the middle of it like our hemoglobin does, chlorophyll has magnesium in the middle of it, and that's what makes it green. So when you take blue-green algae or anything that has a lot of chlorophyll in it, you're going to get more heme, and that you have a building block of hemoglobin, so that can help to prevent anemia. Spirulina may improve muscle strength and endurance, and what contributes to muscle fatigue is exercise-induced oxidative damage. So spirulina may help reduce this. And there are studies that show that it helps to improve muscle strength and endurance, which is very nice. So, and there was another study that showed that it can improve oxygen uptake during, there was an arm circling exercise that somebody did. And they found that it improved the oxygen uptake. So it's going to be helpful for any kind of exercise and to help to rebuild your muscles as well. And there's a possibility that it will support blood sugar control. This was actually an animal study. And there was also a review of studies on humans. And they found that doses ranging from very low doses to as much as 8 grams could reduce your fasting blood sugar in people with type 2 diabetes. But not on postprandial, after you eat blood sugar or on hemoglobin A1C. So it has protein and vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, and it can help manage inflammation, cholesterol, blood sugar, and blood pressure. It's generally considered to be safe. You have to be careful if you're taking immunosuppressants or cholesterol-lowering medications, because it can lower things too much, and blood pressure medicine too. And so if you're not doing those things, then it could be pretty safe to take it. But you should always check with your doctor or your friendly local naturopath. So that's the spirulina situation. All right, so before we get into some more things that are good for you, so do you want to give us an update on what happened with your doctor and your cholesterol and your what's going on there?
Yeah, I can give you an update on that. I have been having some problems with leg pain again and other various pains too. My wrists, my legs. I didn't talk to you about the wrist part yet. That's
a new, I think you mentioned
that's, it. Yeah, well, it's a new development. I was wearing a wrist guard at night because
I
tend to fold over my wrist when I sleep at night, and I'd wake up and it'd be super sore. And I thought it was like an arthritis thing, and I've been having all sorts of issues with it. Well, since I stopped taking the latest drug, my wrist pain has subsided dramatically.
Oh.
And I'm not wearing the brace anymore.
Right.
Anyway, that's another story. Other problems that I was having is having problems with urgency.
Oh, really?
And the urgency has backed off a lot. So that's another thing. And so basically what happened is I was...
Urinary urgency?
Yeah, urinary urgency. Okay. So I was taking a PCK... What is it called?
PCSK9 inhibitor, evolocumab.
Yeah, right, which really worked well when I first started doing it because I was having problems with the statins because the statins, I was getting severe leg pain and I couldn't really... exert myself over 80% of my aerobic max capacity because the pain in the legs was too intense to be able to get any further up than that. So it was really, really painful to ride my bike and to work out. So I took myself off of the statins for a couple of weeks and ta-da, problem solved. And then I was then able to go up to 85 to 90% of my capacity, and I even hit close to 100% on a 13% grade on my bicycle outside.
Oh, dear.
So there was like, and without the side effects that I'd had before my heart surgery, which was white dots in front of my eyes because I had no oxygen going to my brain.
Right.
Other various things going on. But anyway, I... So that's when I was switched over to this inhibitor, which made a big difference.
Yeah.
And my cholesterol levels were not that terrible. They were about 170, 180, I think is where it was at that time. My LDLs were in the upper 70s.
Right.
And
they want you to be below 70.
And then I just had a test done. A week ago, and a lipid test, and my LDL is at 59.
Right.
And I'm having all sorts of leg pain, cramp problems.
Right.
And it's all back to the way it was back when I was taking the statins.
Right.
And if I cannot get my heart over 80% without just enormous amounts of pain. Plus, climbing a set of stairs is like climbing a mountain.
Right.
I feel like I rode my bike 100 miles yesterday every time I try to climb stairs.
Yeah.
So, not good.
No.
So, we're testing to see if I'm having muscle damage, I
so
guess.
The evolu-
you tell me.
So, the evolocumab, you know, brand name Repatha, you take that every 2 weeks.
That's correct.
And so, you have to wait 2 weeks for it to wear off. And so
longer. The shelf life is even longer than that. It's going to probably take a month or two before it really, really comes down to not there anymore. But the, you know, so that I'm a little upset about, but that's another story. The, yeah, the effects are just, they're interfering with my lifestyle.
Yeah. And it could be that it just dropped your cholesterol way too low.
Right. And here's another thing. The company that makes that is a company called Amgen. They make the actual Repatha. They have one dose. And that same dose is the same one they would give to a 300-pound man who has heart issues. And I'm 130 pounds.
Right.
So, wait a minute.
That's, that makes no sense.
I'm crying foul here. You know, like something is really, really wrong.
Right.
Because it makes no sense. Exactly. And, you know, to have my total cholesterol down to 150, which I have not seen since I was 18 years old.
Right.
Is, and I'm about to turn 69, seems a little excessive, does it not?
Well, it's whether it's excessive or not, you're having symptoms.
Oh, horrible.
So if you're having symptoms, your cholesterol's too low. And if they want you to take that drug, they need to lower the dose. They need to figure out a way to lower the dose. I don't know if there's a way to do that. I don't know if evolocumab is even off patent.
I read on their site today that there are cases where they will have you just inject yourself once a month. But it's still
that
the same
matter.
Amount. It's still the same amount.
No.
So it doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
And I'm having this horrible reaction. And it feels I feel awful. I feel really weak.
If this is the same amount they're giving to a 150-pound to 300-pound person.
Right.
Doesn't
it's the same
it
amount
make sense?
Straight across the board. There is no other option
that
from
doesn't
that
make
company.
Any sense. It doesn't make because you have a high metabolism and you work out a lot, you use your muscles a lot. So you need some cholesterol to rebuild your muscles. Because remember, what does cholesterol do? Cholesterol's job, cholesterol is part of every cell membrane in your body, and if you don't if you don't replenish it, you can't rebuild your cells. And the thing with skeletal muscle is that you're using them all the time.
Right.
And so they're always being used and then in need of regeneration.
And the other thing that happens with me and it is, you know, I tend to pay a pretty close attention to my body and what it's doing because of my athletic endeavors that I do on my bike. I'm down 50 watts of power.
Yeah. That's a lot.
50 watts.
That's
a huge,
huge
drop. That
oh,
is
sure.
an absolutely huge drop. I can't get my wattage back.
Right.
And it's not going to come back overnight. And that really makes me upset.
Right.
Because I have
You need to rebuild your muscles.
I have a big gravel ride coming up in 2 weeks. I'd really like to be in better shape
for. So
I lost all my fitness by the drug. I lost all my power that I had. I was running my wattage that I was running when I was doing intervals and spin class was somewhere in the 250 to 300 watt range, and I can't even come close to 200 right now.
Wow.
So my wattage in that case is down even more than that.
Right.
I'm just being restricted, and it just feels awful.
And it makes no sense because one of the things you do to help your cardiovascular health, one of the things we know is that cardio exercise increases HDL and lowers LDL and lowers triglycerides. And, you know, when you take statins or any cholesterol-lowering med, you're not excused from exercise.
Right.
And so if the drug makes it so you can't exercise, that makes no sense.
Right.
The drug is counterproductive.
And that's why I went from the statins to this, because that was the argument that I had with my cardiologist, and he totally agreed with me.
Yeah.
But now, you know, what, 6 months later,
I just wonder if there's a PCSK9 inhibitor that you can control the dose. That's something, maybe you can't take Repatha. There's other PCSK9 inhibitors. There's Leqvio. But the problem is these drugs are new, so they're still on patent. So only Amgen is making Repatha right now.
That is correct.
If it's still on patent after
it's
17
years.
It's
not open
years.
Market yet.
No, right. So it has to be on the market for 17 years. So it depends what year it came on the market. I don't know what year it did. But it's less than 17 years ago. So it's still on patent. Maybe there's another PCSK9 inhibitor out there that you can control the dose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can... With the injector, can you partially inject yourself?
Nope.
Can't do that.
It's a one shot. Yeah.
So that doesn't work. maybe the answer is, this sounds awful, you need to go back to statins, but at children's doses.
If there are such a thing.
Well, they put kids on statins.
Yeah.
The thing is...
But I was down to 5 milligrams.
But it doesn't matter. People say that. It was only 5 milligrams of rosuvastatin. That's... 5 milligrams of rosuvastatin is about the same as 20 milligrams of atorvastatin. Potency is totally a thing. Okay. When you take lithium orotate, you take 1 milligram and it does something for you. When you take lithium carbonate, you take 500 milligrams. The potencies are different. So you can't think about, is it 5 milligrams? Only 5 milligrams. It sounds like it's not a lot, but it is.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, if the rosuvastatin at 5 milligrams is messing you up,
then
you need to try 2.5 or 1 milligram if you're going to go back to a statin. The thing is, obviously you're taking too much for your body.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a way to get a PCSK9 inhibitor on board, obviously lowering cholesterol too much is bad for you. And every way you've done it, it hasn't worked. Whether it's the statin... Or the ezetimibe,
which
is the...
Yeah, had negative effects from it.
Yes.
And it comes after time. You know, it takes a while until it
establishes. Well, it takes a while because it's two things. It's a matter of... it takes time to get your cholesterol to that low level. Like when your cholesterol was... When your LDL was still in the 80s, you were fine. Now that your cholesterol is 59, you're a lot worse. So it's because you have less and less cholesterol. And as you have less and less cholesterol... Your muscles get further and further behind in their ability to repair themselves. Mm-hmm. And you're pushing and you're exercising so much. And you should be able to exercise so much if that's what you want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm now restricted to keeping my exercise down into a low zone, you know, zone 2.
So what are they going to say to that? Are they going to say, "Oh, well you have to take..."
That's the way it's going to be for the rest of my life. If they're going to say that, I'm going to gamble. I'm going to stop.
Well, and we'll put you on all kinds of antioxidants. You'll have to take Hawthorne, and we'll put you on... You're already taking resveratrol. We'll give you spirulina.
I'll just gamble because, I mean, quality of life to me is much more important. And you know what? If I lose a couple of years of life because of it, then oh well.
But the other thing is, it took you till age 60. How old were you when you had the surgery?
66.
Yeah, it took you till age 66 to jam up your... Mm-hmm. Your arteries, mm-hmm. and they said this should never happen again because they put in arteries that don't tend to get atherosclerosis.
That's
correct. So I don't know why it's so critical for you to be on these statins. So if that's true, then
I have other arteries in my body. That's why it's that critical.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. You have other coronary arteries.
I could have other issues in other places.
Right.
So we have to watch that. And then the other thing that I probably need to look at is a calcium score to see if I've got calcification in my arteries in the rest of my body. So that I need, you know, because you need to worry about that, because if one of those little platelets breaks off, you could have a stroke or whatever.
Yes, it'll block the coronary artery and you can have a heart attack. That's right. So... The answer is, if you're not going to take a cholesterol-lowering med, then we have to figure out... you can take spirulina. It says right here, spirulina can help you lower cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to use the mechanism. Just going to help you sweep it out. It's going to lower it. And part of the way that antioxidants work to lower cholesterol is they simply make your arteries have more integrity. They do a couple of things. They give your arteries more integrity so that they're less likely to get damaged. If they're less likely to get damaged, then your body... The whole thing about an atherosclerotic plaque, what an atherosclerotic plaque is, it is a... an atherosclerotic plaque is your body's attempt to repair a blood vessel. Mm-hmm. If you have oxidative damage to the endothelium, which is the lining of that blood vessel, your body's going to send platelets, calcium... and cholesterol to that area to repair it.
Mm.
And if you don't have oxidative damage, that's going to be less likely to happen. So so the answer is to give you more antioxidants,
mm-hmm.
and to look for the herbs that lower cholesterol, but not in a production way or a circulation way, in a gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
Eat a lot of fiber, which you already do.
I do that.
And then the things like spirulina, which is going to work by being an antioxidant.
I'm eating lots of essential fatty acids.
Yeah.
I'm doing that.
And we'll get some pomegranate juice, and we should probably both be drinking some pomegranate juice every day. I definitely am going to drink pomegranate juice for
I have my avocados every day.
Avocados, right. And that's going to work because of the monounsaturated fats.
And we have our salmon at least once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And are you taking fish oil?
No.
So you should probably be taking fish oil.
Ugh. I have a problem with that.
All right, so we won't have you take fish oil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fish oil and I are not digestively sound with one another.
Well, we got other things you can do. It's okay. There are other things you could do.
I don't want to burp like a fish all day long.
So you can have to take spirulina. You take a little spirulina. You might have to... You're on resveratrol already.
Yeah.
And we'll look for other things that...
CoQ10, I've got.
You're already taking CoQ... Well, the CoQ10 you're taking because... Because statins deplete CoQ10, but also if you're breaking down muscle tissue and you add back CoQ10, you'll have more energy in those muscles. So one of the things your doctor did is he's sending you for a creatine phosphokinase test.
Right. It was his first response to
what you're going
to
get drawn. The thing is, and we're going to see if you have elevated CPK. He probably did just CPK, not isoenzymes.
I have no idea.
I would have to look at the requisition to see. But anyway, sometimes if you have muscle breakdown, your creatine phosphokinase will rise because it's a breakdown product of muscle, and you'll have more spill into your blood when you have muscular inflammation and destruction. So if you have that going on, you might have an elevated CPK. And the thing is, you might not, though, and it doesn't mean you still don't have muscle breakdown.
Okay.
Well,
I know I have muscle breakdown because I can tell you by results that
yes,
I have
but
muscle breakdown.
It may not be enough to cause inflammation. It just depends on how your body is processing the CPK. It may or may not be elevated.
I got no power, and I had more power 2 months ago.
Well, we know that you have, obviously, the lowered cholesterol is making it so that you can't rebuild your muscle tissue. We know that that's the case.
Right. And I'm drinking protein shakes after every single workout. I mean, I'm doing all the things that I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, you
to
need,
rebuild
but again,
muscle.
The protein is going to help you rebuild the muscle, but you need cell membranes. And if you don't have cholesterol, you can't rebuild cell membranes. So you're short on cells. That's why you're having the problem you're having. Hmm. And you need more cholesterol to be able to do that.
I'm weak. I'm very weak.
Oh, all right. I mean,
sure. Anyway, whatever. It's what it is.
It'll be interesting. So it'll be interesting to see the creatine kinase results. But like I said, if you want to try to go back on a statin, but at baby doses, that might be a way to go. Like if you're going to take rosuvastatin. You're in where 5 milligrams bothered you. Okay, so those are tablets. You can cut those.
Right.
You can cut them down, and maybe they have children's doses.
Or can
doses.
They make them in 1 milligram?
I don't know. You have to find out. That's what I'm saying. They give children lipid-lowering medications now. So they may come in very tiny doses. But if they don't, you get the smallest dose you can get, and you use a pill cutter, and you start cutting it, and see if you really need to take a lipid-lowering agent. If not, we will just put you on lots of antioxidants. And like I said, you're going to go on, and I could put you on cardio flow. There's different things I could put you on.
Right.
That help keep your arteries clear and not produce the atherosclerosis. All right. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a few minutes left. So now let me talk to you about another lovely herb that I'm taking that can be energizing. It's Eleuthero. Eleuthero used to be known as Siberian ginseng, but for some reason they decided we're not going to call it that anymore. I'm not sure if it has similar properties to ginseng. I'm not sure why it was even called Siberian ginseng. When it's not in the Panax genus, but I guess because it has similar properties to the ginsengs. It is an Asian herb, and it's been used for thousands of years as a healing remedy in folk medicine. It's commonly called Siberian ginseng, and it was changed to Eleuthero to avoid confusion with true ginseng, which is Panax ginseng. And then American ginseng, which is Panicum foliaceus. And Panicum foliaceus is a very nice herb. It can help you regulate blood sugar. So Eleuthero is a relative of ginseng. It grows in the same region, so maybe it's in the same family and has similar effects. But true ginsengs are more prized. They have better researched health effects. And Eleuthero is not as expensive as the ginsengs. And it might be less effective than ginseng. I also think it's, I don't need something revving me up a lot. So I appreciate the fact that Eleuthero isn't as stimulating as Panax ginseng. So Eleuthero tends to be less potent than regular ginseng. It can be taken in teas, tinctures. I'm using the tincture right now. I also have a glycerite. You can take it in bulk in a capsule or a pill. And they call it an adaptogen. Those are botanicals that are thought to protect the body from effects of stress. It can help with heart disease prevention. It can help with anxiety and depression and recovery from stress burnout. I'm in. Sounds good. So Eleuthero has been studied a lot. There's a lot of benefits. It can help with emotional stress, anxiety, and depression. And there is a study that shows that it boosts energy and metabolism and physical performance in some study participants, and also positive effects on the cardiovascular health, improving blood flow and blood pressure. So there are other studies that show other claims for it, that it does have antioxidant potential. I'm in. An animal study showed promised immune-boosting properties, and that it may also help regulate blood sugar, which we know the other ginsengs, the Panaxes do. And as far as anxiety, stress, and depression, it wasn't that great at that, but they used lower doses, so you may have to take more to have a mood effect. So the idea is that research is needed, and so more trials are needed too. So as far as we know, it's safe. You just follow the recommended doses. And, you know, you have to be careful with any herb that you take because any herb that you take can cause side effects. So you have to pay attention to that. If you take too much Eleuthero, you can get drowsy. You can get a headache. You can get insomnia. You can become irritable, and you can become depressed. So you have to be careful that that doesn't happen. If you take it in reasonable doses, that's probably not going to happen to you. All right, let's talk about chlorella. Chlorella is also something I'm taking for its detoxifying properties. And after we do the chlorella, we will probably be able to wrap up. Chlorella is another nutrient-dense algae, and it's another green freshwater algae. And there are 30 different species, but the Chlorella vulgaris and Pyrenoidosa are most commonly used in research. It's very nutritious. It has some protein and some B12, some iron and vitamin C, lots of antioxidants, vitamins and minerals, a little bit omega-3, and some fiber. The Chlorella is known to bind to heavy metals, which helps with detox. And it can help to remove heavy metals and other harmful compounds from the body. Heavy metals include some elements that are essential in small amounts like iron and copper, but the cadmium and lead and even iron and copper can be toxic in high amounts. And people can get exposed to heavy metals through pollution or certain job exposures, like if you're mining and other industry jobs. Chlorella has been found to weaken the heavy metal toxicity in the liver, brain, and kidneys, and also remove other harmful chemicals that are found in food like dioxin. So that's really good. Chlorella would be something. So if it helps with dioxin, it may help with other xenoestrogens or xenohormones. So it can help you with general detoxification. Could be helpful for your immune system to help you fight off infections. And it's a complex system that's, your immune system is made up of a lot of different mechanisms, and chlorella has been found to enhance the immune response. And they found in a small study, that men produce more antibodies taking chlorella than when they took a placebo. There was an 8-week study that showed people who taking chlorella showed more activity in their immune systems. So chlorella may have immune-boosting effects in some populations and age groups. Yes. Okay. And I think we'll talk about how chlorella may also improve cholesterol. And there are several studies that show that taking 5 to 10 grams a day, that's a lot. I'm not taking that much. Lowered your total and LDL cholesterol and triglycerides in people with high blood pressure and elevated cholesterol. And it has some, as we said, it has some niacin, things in it that can help lower cholesterol, like niacin, fiber, carotenoids, and antioxidants. All right, I think I'm going to wrap up and we'll come back to chlorella next week and we'll talk about how it's a great antioxidant and how it works. And we have, obviously, we have many more things to talk to you about. And you should always get a hold of me and, you know, email me or write me on Facebook Live and ask questions. And you may find that I'll answer a question for you. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.